Ram. Mm. I've been listening to that a lot, because in retrospect, it's quite an interesting album. We thought, well, let's sort of make a change. Let's go to New York. Good place, a lot of great musicians. Let's get a different slant on everything. So I just held some drum auditions, put the word out, and drummers came around. And Denny Sywell was the best of those. He'd been working as a session man, and he was a nice guy, so we got on well. So I started the Ram sessions with him. And having my best mate, my wife, to sing along with was very comforting.
To a bonus episode of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi, and I got my buddy, my co-host, Andy Nichols. Andy, my friend, what's going on?
Ram on part two, buddy.
Ram on part two. And as you can see, we have two special guests who joined us last year to talk about this wonderful, wonderful covers album that they did called Ram On, a 50th anniversary tribute to Paul and Linda McCartney's Ram. And we are talking to Denny Sywell and Fernando Perdomo. Gentlemen, good to have you back.
Good to be back.
Thank now, you, guys.
Is it really a cover record when three of the original guys are on it?
Well, maybe.
Maybe a half.
Yeah, it's a half of covers, maybe.
It's a reboot.
There you go. I like that. But last time you guys were on, not only were we talking about this wonderful CD that you guys did, but you also talked about wanting to do a live show. And then, you know, one of the reasons why you guys are here is to talk about this live show that you're finally able to do. Fernando, start us off and talk about finally being able to get this live show up and running.
Well, good things come to those who wait, and the stars have aligned, the vaccines have aligned, and everything is starting to get back to a better place for live music. Mm-hmm. My initial idea was to do a concert, but the pandemic shut down everything. So I was mm-hmm. like, we will just, you know, do some recording, and we put together this record, and came out spectacular. And we always had in the back of our mind, you know, that some of these guys, especially the ones that are based in Los Angeles, would be fantastic to get in a room, work it out, and get on stage and play this incredible record cover to cover, which has never happened in the States. You know, there was one group that put it together in the Netherlands, along with our friend Mike Viola, and that was an incredible thing, but never in the States. So this is a really special event, we couldn't think of a better place than the Troubadour, one of our favorite places in the world, and it's a club that has an intense history for singer-songwriter rock and roll in Los Angeles. It's sort of the home of it's where our friend Elton John had his big moment, mm-hmm. you know, as depicted in the Rocket Man movie. Also, you know, the Eagles played their first show there, and James Taylor,
yeah, Russell.
Yeah.
Have you played? You played the Troubadour tons of times, right? What's some of your Troubadour stories?
Oh, geez. You know, the last time I believe I played it with Shelby Flint, this kind of a jazz band that I was in years ago, mm-hmm. but I played it one time with Bob Duro, the guy who wrote Schoolhouse Rocks. I was involved with that, the original recordings in 1969 mm-hmm. of Schoolhouse Rocks. Some of those that we did as demos were used as finals. So we put together a version of it, having Jack Sheldon, I'm just a Bill.
Right, yeah.
Jack Sheldon, Bob Duro, myself, and his bass player, Bill Takis at the time, who's no longer, well, Bob and Bill are both gone. Jack is gone too, I think. I'm not sure. Jesus. But anyway, we played the, what was great about it is it was sold out. And all of the kids that were coming in had nose rings and tattoos. It looked like they'd bite your head off and shit down your neck, you know.
Right.
It really looked like a tough crowd. And they pressed up against the stage, you know. And we started doing some Schoolhouse Rock. And they just all turned into nine-year-olds and started singing along. It was beautiful.
That's awesome. I can just picture now all these tattooed nose ring people just singing, I'm just a Bill, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
My so, heroes, yeah. Right.
So the show, what do you guys have a date set for the show, right?
It's July 16th. It's on sale at troubadour.com. And it's a Saturday. So there's literally no reason why anybody loves this record shouldn't go, because I think that's ground zero for Beatles fans.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
In the entire Southern California, Northern California, even. I'm sure we're going to have people traveling for this, and it's going to be a pretty epic undertaking and a very epic event. And, you know, the good news is, I mean, actually their whole thing is good news, but one of the things that's magical is that most of the people that played on the record happened to be available that night. And these are, as I said, when we did our interview, the people that we chose for the record all already knew the songs, all already loved Ram. Everybody who's on Ram On are people that have been listening to the record since childhood, like me. So all the guys that are playing in the house band, it's not a matter of them learning the songs cold. They're sitting there refining their parts. They're sitting there working on things. Actually, Denny, I got a work. They all got together today and did some vocal rehearsing, and they sound Beach Boys tight. I mean, these guys are pros, and they were working out the harmonies for Dear Boy, and it's
excellent. Now, Denny, now I know you talked about doing a lot of these songs during like Fest for Beatles Fans when you've attended those shows. Now, have you ever done the album all the way through?
No.
Okay, like this. So this will be like a first time for you too, running through all these songs.
It's not a very easy album to do.
Right.
At one fest, I forget where how many years ago it was, I saw you drum to Monkberry Moondelight once. Right. I forget what year that was or when, but I do recall that one year you did do that, and that was awesome. Right. But to do it all the way straight through would be a first time, right, for you, right?
Yeah. I mean, when I was running out of things to do with at those Beatle Fests, so I said to Mark, I said, let me have a Ram clinic, and let me just play. I wanted to do as much of Ram as I could, you know, like why can't I have like an hour in the afternoon and play along to the CDs and tell some stories. And he says, I don't know. And he finally gave it to me. And after he heard it, then he says, now you have to do that every time. Because it was a fan favorite. Everybody loved it.
Yeah. Right. But excellent.
I would do that in a heartbeat.
I'm dying. And these are songs. I mean, look, this is an album that crossed the line. People just enjoy every second of. So to hear the songs played live and to see Denny play these songs live, obviously already a beautiful thing to play original recordings. But the thing I'm looking forward to is the same way he talked about these, you know, tattooed and pierced kids having a great time and turning into nine-year-olds listening to Schoolhouse Rock, is going to see the faces, everyone in the crowd going, we were there the first time this record was played cover to cover with Danny Steinbeck, and a bunch of people that are going to have the same faces. I'm going to be smiling from end to end. All the guys in the band are going to know it's going to be a love fest. It's going to be very joyful.
No, listen, Fernando, you guys are doing you guys are filling a big void with this show, because we know McCartney doesn't cover this area, this part of his career very often. I mean, lately, I mean, Andy, I mean, I think Too Many People is the only song he's really covered.
That's it.
From this period. Maybe I'm my love from time to time.
But, well, other than getting Ramon in a sound check.
Yeah. Ramon in the sound check, but that's it. So you guys are really filling a void.
Yeah. I mean, look, that's okay. That's one of the things that makes tribute bands so popular these days, mm-hmm. is, you have Genesis.
I'm in a tribute band.
No. No.
I'm hearing it. One of the things that makes tribute bands very, very attractive these days is that they'll pull off all the songs that a lot of the artists are kind of either too famous to or too afraid to do, because, it's really tough to have a discography as big as McCartney, and he's never going to please everybody. I mean, when I saw him the first time doing on the Off the Ground tour, I wanted to hear Wings, because, I'm such a huge fan of Wings, and I'll never forget when I went to a Jeff Emmerich book signing. And everybody was geeking out about Beatles stuff. And I was just like, my question was like, I'd love to hear some Wing stories. And everyone looked at me like I was the devil or something.
And I was just like,
this it's music true. Is incredibly inspiring. And, nobody's expecting Paul to ever do a full Wing set. So, we're this music is important, and we're gonna play it right. And it's going to be awesome. It's going to be so much fun.
Now, you're bringing back a bunch of people that were on the album, right?
Yes.
Talk about people who are on the album that's going to be joining you live on the show.
Well, the core band is going to be made up of Denny on drums. We were going to have Matt Tecky, who's going to be percussion. Matt Tecky was actually Matt and Jordan Summers, who's playing keyboards, were my bandmates for Echo in the Canyon with Jacob Dylan, which is an absolutely wonderful thing. Got Jason Burke and Timmy Sean, who also on the record, Timmy
Smile
sang.
Away and Monkberry Moon
and
Delight.
Monkberry.
I haven't even met these guys. I just heard them on record.
Yeah. No, oh, that's right. That's right. Because you guys were getting a lot of this stuff via digital file, right?
Face to face with him, yeah.
Right. Amazing. Adrian, but go ahead, Fernando.
Adrian Bourgeois, who beat out about six or seven different guys to sing Your Boy, who's going to be an amazing singer. Absolutely amazing singer. And then his very good friend, Ricky Berger, who's an incredible singer, flute player, multi-instrumentalist. She's going to be doing the Linda parts, and she's absolutely stunning and an incredible musician. And I don't know if I told you this, Denny, but she's driving down from St. Louis Obispo every single rehearsal. That's how much.
Wow.
It's going to be amazing. It's going to be incredible.
And to have somebody represent, the Linda voice down there, I mean, that's absolutely necessary to have, that. So, kudos to you guys for making that happen as well.
Oh, and so, part of the, the thing, I've been a huge fan of the vocal sound of Wings and of the blend between Paul and Linda, and also the magical blend between Paul, Linda, and Denny Lane. I mean, those are the coolest backup vocal parts in the history of rock. And Denny Sywell was right there producing them.
Yes. Right. Wow. Wow.
Incredible.
Fernando, a technical question regarding the show on the 16th. Do you know, will there be a streaming option? Will people be able to watch this live or no?
If it sells out, they offer a streaming option. If it doesn't, So that's incentive for well, you know, I mean, one of the reasons why we're doing, you know, promo for the show is that we really do want this to be, you know, a real success. So that maybe this, you know, but if it's a one-time thing, it's a one-time thing, and we're going to have a great time, and it's going to be, you know, a very memorable night, because it's this music is spectacular, and it's like, it's going to be really, really be great. We're also working on special guests, because I mean, the show is a little bit away. So tomorrow, we have our first rehearsal with the core band.
Okay.
We've already people that are definitely going to be coming in. And Lauren Lee, who sang on A Woman, A Why, is going to be there.
Yep.
We're working on getting members of Dead Rock West for Eat at Home. The Dirty Diamonds, who's also one of the opening acts, are going to be performing the Three Legs. It's going to be a... it's going to be a good representation of the sound that we got on the record live. But, you know, the thing about it is, you know, making records in live is a completely different thing, because it's like, I feel like playing live is almost like, you know, doing stunts without a net, because there really is so much more room for error. But at the same time, when you have professional musicians like the ones that we have that play gigs all the time, that are ready to just, you know, shine. It's going to be a really incredible experience. And then another reason why we picked the Troubadour is that it has world-class sound, great lights. Okay. It looks like $1 million. It sounds great. It's also a very comfortable venue. If you want to sit, you can go upstairs and you have a beautiful view. There's also the lounge and all this. And it's just, I've always enjoyed going to shows at the Troubadour. It's also, you know, as is with Ram, the coolest thing about the Troubadour is they've never really remodeled it since the 70s. So you really feel like walk into the Troubadour, you're no longer in 2022.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
As long as the ghosts of Doug Weston don't bother me while I'm there, because we spent a lot of 3 o'clocks in the morning up in his office, I must say.
Really? Denny,
every time I'm like, okay, what type of trouble did David Crosby get himself into over here?
That's great. Denny, there's a track that everybody would love Paul to do. He's never going to do it. You know, Uncle Albert, Admiral Halsey. I mean, how do you feel about going into this show, doing a song like that live? I mean, do you feel like this might be one of the tracks that's going to take you guys a while to get down? Or, I mean, you talk about Admiral.
Probably not. They got a pretty good drummer.
Yeah.
The fact that I could sit down and play it for you now, I do it in my clinic all the time. Well, I haven't done that since COVID, but you know, I know the part so well that I think it's not going to be hard, because on the record, the way we did that was we started with a drum track, and then Fernando built it out. He added the tracks. And how we got the initial drum track was I played along with the CD like I do video fests for my clinic. So we started with the exact track, but we have, I had 50 years to think about the part. So I made minute changes. We had better sounds.
Okay.
And we built it out. Well, that was Fernando's magic. You know, this guy truly is magic with the way he approaches recording. And, the way he put the thing together, it's like, I couldn't have done it with anybody else. I know that. Plus, he's a great musician. He comes from that school. I mean, he knows how to play it with complete authority, which is not too many guys in his age. Even though he looks like a blown up leprechaun with that head on.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, Fernando. I mean, I've unfortunately never been to the Troubadour. I mean, how big is the stage? How many people can you get up on there to perform songs?
I've seen I've seen upwards of 20 people on there, but it's really it comfortably fits 10. And it's got world class sound, and it really, they have a great sound person there. They have a great lighting guy. So it's a professional venue. I mean, you know, recently James Taylor and Carole King did a live DVD there. Live DVD. And I found this out the last time I played there. Ringo Starr did his master class there. His drumming master class with Greg Bissonette. And they actually built a whole new stage. They built an additional stage thing, which they've, you know, pretty much Ringo paid for the stage there. So
wow. So let's talk capacity of the Troubadour. If it sells out, how many people can they fit in there? 500, 700?
I think it's like 650, isn't it?
650? Cool. Okay. Yeah. About 500, 650. You know, and that's not a bad room. And, you know, the energy is going to be incredible.
You guys will sell that out. I firmly believe it. I think you'll sell that out. And I really do.
Right. I wanted to go back to the whole thing about Denny's approach towards Uncle Albert. It was amazing. As a fan of this record since I was 8 years old, it was amazing to hear all the stories directly from Denny about the making of the record. And one of the things that blew me away is they told me that the original rhythm track for Albert was cut in one take. It was not edited. They didn't say, okay, we're going to do Albert now, and then okay, next day or 3 days later. It wasn't a Strawberry Fields situation of cut
right.
And you know, it wasn't in the studio. At the basis of the entire track, there's Denny, Paul, and I think
with Spinoza, but then we redid it with Hugh McCracken.
The song all the way through. And then eventually Paul did his bass, and then they added the orchestra, and they did all the overdubs and all the sound effects. Yeah. And so when we went to go do Ram On, Denny also cut the track in one take. And I've been extremely impressed with the different, see, that this is important how I word this. As a, I am I considered a Gen X or Gen Z?
What year were you born?
I was born in 1980, so I guess I would be a Gen X.
You're borderline. You're Gen X. I'll put you in with me, Gen Xer.
Gen X. Okay. Yeah. So I work with musicians of all ages. I think this client, like 23, 22. I've got some 21s. And there's an epidemic that's happening in recording, and the fact that, you know, a lot of the younger musicians are very reliant on technology. So instead of singing the song all the way through, they'll be like, okay, let me just sing some choruses. Oh, let me just sing some verses. And then they sit there.
Right.
Stretch. And next thing you know, they got a vocal take. I mean, you know, there's a famous video of Ariana Grande comping her vocals, and there's like 75 tracks there of the same thing. And she's listening to all her things. And it's like, look, when you have technology, use it. But for the entire history of recording, especially the first 30 years when everybody was recording on tape, you had to get the song in one take. Because if not, you're wasting time and you're wasting money. Because
right.
In the age of the home studio, you know, you don't even have to spend money on tape. I mean, the whole process is free if you own your own studio. The thing about it is, especially when I'm working with artists that were recording back in the 70s, is that they are with it. I did two tracks with Peter Noon, where he came in and they had booked 3 hours at my studio. He was out of there in 45 minutes, two songs.
And it was
just like, nailed it. And we were there listening to the tracks and not comping for pitch or comping for you know,
performance.
We were comping based on feel, and that's the thing. It's like there was a certain finesse to the there's more preparation, more pre-production, and you know, it's amazing because that's something that's very important to be able to pull off a show like this, is to not just have the songs in your hands, is to have them passion and to be able to play them, you know, and not focus on what notes you're playing, focus on how you're playing them.
Right.
And the guys that we've put together, they know the songs. They know the songs top to bottom, and they've known them for years. So right. It's going to be a lot of fun to be able to, instead of working on learning the songs, working on refining the songs so that they are presented excellent. In the best right. way possible.
And well, if I may, that was one of the things I learned from Paul, because I got all my production skills from having worked with him. And he would always go for the performance. Believe it or not, most of Paul's vocals were just live. There wasn't a lot of comp vocals in those days. If I don't even remember any, to tell you the truth, they didn't comp a lot of stuff. They just took a live performance, you know. And the few records, you know, I was involved with Billy Joel's very first record, Cold Spring mm-hmm. Harbor. And right. and that was nothing but, give me a performance, man. The same right. with another group in San Francisco that I worked with. I found these kids up there that I fell in love with, Pablo Cruz, man. I took him in and
oh, yeah.
demos with him.
Yeah.
And I got performances. I didn't want to go in and fix shit. You know, you got to be able to do it live, man.
Right. Yeah.
So I'll always opt out for a fine performance. Give it to me. Give it to me from the heart, man. I want to
hear it. I hear you. I hear you. Again, the show was Saturday, July 16th at the Troubadour. Tickets are on sale now. So if you're in the area or you want to see this show, please, by all means, call up the Troubadour or go to troubadour.com and find a way to get tickets. Now, the other thing you guys are celebrating is the release of the vinyl of Ram On. So talk about that for a minute.
Yeah. Well, you know, as I was mentioning in the we were talking about this a little bit while we were getting ready, but the pandemic has really affected every single aspect of the music business, and right. one of the things that has been decimated has been the resurgence of vinyl, and the fact that there's one of the major vinyl plants burned down. So mm-hmm. like the vinyl process, the process of making vinyl is extremely delayed. Like Todd right. Rundgren's record called Space Force, that's been done since 2020, and literally Cleopatra Records just announced that the only reason why it's not out is that they're waiting on the vinyl. And, you know, the initial plan for the vinyl was to have it out by Christmas, but mm-hmm. now it's coming in July. And so Christmas in July, but you know, it also extends the project because, you know, yes, at this point, you know, the official 50th has passed, but you know, we're still celebrating the 50 years of the record. You know, it's an amazing thing that 1971, you know, it's still a fresh record. You know, that right. there's not, you can't say that about most of the records that are on that list, because they scream a certain generation. The mm-hmm. thing about that it's inspired so many indie rock artists. It's been, it really is like, you know, when our friend Elliot did that whole thing about Elliot Roberts, who's a YouTuber who did the whole thing about, was Ram the first
right.
indie first, rock record? Right. And it's mm-hmm. like, it does make a lot of sense because it was really gutsy. I mean, Paul's first two records, actually, if you go all the way through his discography in the 70s, he was never safe. He was never completely safe. I mean, with McCartney 1 being a combination of instrumentals and you know, rockers, know, hottest sunglasses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Coring, ending the record with a drum solo. And Rand having, you know, everything from country, rockers, 50s, old, you know, Buddy Holly, you know, the epic Beatles style tracks, you know, the ukulele, you know, again, it's like, when you think of indie pop, the ukulele is sort of like a modern thing where it's like where it's become like this quirky instrument. And for Paul to put the ukulele out in front on track, you know, three, right, on a record, which track three is usually the coveted spot for the number one hit, you know,
mm-hmm. So
it's really interesting, and have that happen twice, you know,
right. So
it's a unique record, and it doesn't scream live because there's a lot of stuff that with the orchestra and all those things. We're going to make it happen. We've got a trumpet player that's going to be coming in. We've got Jordan, who is a Mellotron master, is going to be there with Mellotron and getting all the string stuff going. And again, you know, things are going to develop. Tomorrow's our first rehearsal. And tomorrow's, like I was telling Denny, I'm like, tomorrow's inventory day. We will see what we're starting. And it's only going to get better. So it's going to be really cool. It's going to be a lot of fun.
You're going to try to get Spinoza for the show, or is he able to attend? Or,
well, I mean,
or is that still top secret?
It's still top secret, but I mean, he would have to come out here. He'd have to have another reason to come out here, because there's not going to be a budget to fly people in and
right.
Stuff.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Fair enough. Now,
we have a couple of my heavyweight friends know about it, and they say if we're in town, there's a chance that we would stop down and play what we played on the record. You know.
Okay.
Some major dudes too. So we'll see.
Right.
Flying in from Jersey. He wrote me, like, hey, if I fly in, can I play on the songs I played on? I'm like, yeah, please. You know, I mean, that's a no brainer. But again, it needs to be on there. I mean, really, we're putting this together on a very limited situation.
Right, shoestring budget,
sure,
probably.
Sure, yeah.
Not even a shoestring. So.
Now, Cherry Red Records is putting up.
We'd love to get an orchestra.
I bet. So Cherry Red Records is putting out the vinyl, I'm assuming, CD.
Through Cherry Red, Martin Darville, the manager of Yes's label. And it's going to be a really cool packaging. The packaging is going to be gorgeous, and it's going to be a record set. So for
two?
It's a double album. Yeah.
Double LP.
Makes sense, awesome. Because you added Another Day, Old Woman, Oh Why, and then the two Too Many People reprise on there as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Okay. All right. Makes sense. Perfect. Really looking forward to that. So this is going to be available on July 16th, is right around that time. That's a Saturday. Yep. So
we have an official release date somewhere. I think July 8th or something. So okay. It's going to be
all right.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait to hold it in my hands. You know, it's like
same here.
Yeah, let's go, baby. Let's get it.
We haven't even heard of test pressing yet. We need to okay test pressing before they actually, you know, because there's a lot of plants around the world that are doing it now.
Right,
people are hopscotching around trying to find.
Right.
We don't want this thing to come out if it's not exactly right.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, a lot of artists are doing that, though, Fernando. I mean, you know, putting the CD out first, and then the vinyl will come out, you know,
six months later.
Yeah. So, I mean, but that's just, like you said, I mean, it's just the state of the business at the moment, you know. But anyways, can we talk about Some People Never Know for a second? Because you guys did a cover of that in December as well. Let's talk about that.
Fernando's demo.
Yeah, right. There was the whole reason that Denny agreed to do this is because we had already recorded a couple of songs in my studio. Mm-hmm. saw the way I work, and he saw the sounds that I'm capable of. And it was through a project that I used to have that was working on some covers, and I had suggested my "Some People Never Know" is my favorite Wings song, and I had suggested that one. My partner with the old project had suggested Too Many People, and we put together these recordings. And then when we went to go do the new version of "Some People Never Know," it was a no-brainer to bring in the beautiful, sweet voice of Adrien Bourgeois to record the vocals. Mm. He absolutely nailed it. And Adrien and Ricky Berger sing all the time together, so I can't wait to hear them harmonizing on that one. I was saying, man, it would be fun to do that during the encore, because that's a song that was never... Did you guys ever play that song live?
I think he did it once
early.
Or twice during the...
Once or twice it was done on the... in the first
university,
the first couple of university shows, it was done and then dropped.
Yeah, so that's fun. I mean, that's a gorgeous song. I mean, that's
absolutely. Forget going to the studio the day we recorded that in London at Abbey Road. Right. I was taking a cab up to Abbey Road, and there was this guy on the street corner had these long plastic tubes, like colored tubes. And he stood on the corner and he was like making these things spin and they would make a sound. So I said to the cab driver, stop. I jumped out of the cab. I picked one up and I took it to the studio. And that was the day that we recorded "Some People Never Know." Mm-hmm. And I said, Paul, check this out. And we overdubbed it and it's on the track.
Ah, very cool.
Yeah, so that's a little insight.
Right. Well, question about "Some People Never Know," Denny, if you remember, the ending to that song is you know, with the percussions and the sticks and all that going on. It's very familiar to Chicago's beginnings, the ending to that. Was that ever talked about being an influence, or was that just all you guys on your own?
That was Paul and me screwing around, you know. Right. He loved to sit. I'd get off my drums and he'd sit down and start banging on them. But when it came to percussion overdubs, the two of us, we would just arm ourselves with as much crap as we could and just have at it, you know.
Right.
He loved percussion overdubs. Still does it, sure.
When I listen to that part of the song, I can't not think of that old classic photo of Denny playing congas while smoking a joint and the I remember looking at that record when I was like,
Paul lit it though. He started the damn joint. I was just
of course.
There was the let's just talk for a second about the packaging of Red Rose Speedway. That was a lot for a 9-year-old to take in. I mean, there's some crazy photos in there.
There's certainly artwork. Eduardo Pelosi, who did all that artwork.
I mean, I'm sorry. Anything with titties on it, you know, obviously is.
Yeah.
It was awkward. It was awkward.
Right.
It wasn't
some of those. It was Paul getting a shave.
Yes.
That was from Marrakesh when we were down there in Marrakesh.
Right. On the archive release of Wildlife, there's on the "Some People Never Know," you hear the trumpet playing.
Trumpet.
And I believe that's you, right, Denny?
That's me.
Yeah. Very cool. A big question. I love Wildlife. I love it. And I think it's one of his most underrated albums and Wings' underrated albums. What's your take on the approach to that album? Because Paul, you know, was inspired by Dylan, you know, to do a quick album, and you guys are sitting on songs like "A Love for You," little Lamb Dragonfly," "Little Woman Love," "Big Barn Bed," "Drove All Night." You got all these songs, but you guys instead go in and do a bunch of one take songs. Talk about the approach and how did you feel about that approach?
We didn't know what he was really looking for, but you know, that record was, he had the tunes half finished, I would say, and Danny Lane, it was just the four of us. There was no Henry yet. Paul and Benny and me, and we rehearsed them up at the farm in Scotland, up at the Rude Studio.
Right, right.
Yeah. And so they were loosely rehearsed. And mm-hmm. when we got into the studio to Abbey Road to record, we just did the same thing that we were doing on the rehearsals. And it was pretty good. But five of those eight songs were first takes.
Right.
And I wondered why he said, yeah, I love that. We'll work on this one. So we'd go in and fix a couple of overdubs and mix and all that mm-hmm. stuff. But it was done within a span of 2 weeks. No, if right. not shorter than
less,
2 weeks.
Yeah. 8 days, maybe. Yeah. Eight, maybe. Yeah. So you were fine with that approach for the album? I mean,
he was the boss. I mean, I gave him total trust because we'd just done Ram together. So he and I were, we were like shoe and sock,
right.
you know, sock and glove, whatever. I mean, we were really, I trusted his musical sense and everything. So I knew that he wanted to pull it off because he had reason behind him. So I, you know, free reign and let me help as much as I can.
Cool.
And the record, I thought we could have spent a little more time getting some parts a little bit better, but it had a life to it that was wonderful. I'll never forget Take It Tony, you know,
right.
on Humble.
Yep. Right.
Tony's sitting up there just twiddling his thumbs and we're grooving in the studio. It was the same thing with Road All Night when we were just jamming one day at the Ram sessions, and Paul comes in from lunch and he wants to jam, and I'm looking at the engineers, they're frantically trying to get everything together, you know. By the time they got it together, we were spent, you know. And they said, okay Paul, we're ready now. And I went, oh shit. And here we go, take two. So take two was just as good. I mean,
I love.
We didn't think about it. It was, it was just energy.
Instant energy.
What did you think about it after? I'm sure you know that it was then transformed into the song Giddy for Roger Daltrey. What'd you think of that?
I never heard it. I never cared to hear it. I thought that I had the only copy of that in the world. That one of the engineers, Tim, or I believe it was Tim that recorded it. He slipped it to me on a cassette. He said, don't tell Paul you have this. And I thought I had the only copy of the world of that song until a fan sent me a CD of it. Of us recording.
Right.
That's phenomenal.
I thought it was great.
Some guy overdubbed bass onto it.
Drove All Night?
The version that he like decided to what would Paul do if he tracked bass on it? It sounds really good, actually. He played really good.
I don't want to hear anything that wasn't just Paul and I slamming away.
Right.
You know what it was? I'll tell you. For me, it was, we're just slamming away. And then he starts singing. And now we're both into it. We're just really into it. He starts singing. I wrote all night till I finally hit daybreak.
Yeah.
For me, he says, no, that's not what it meant. But for me, that meant I can finally make music with someone other than the Beatles.
Wow.
And that's the way I felt it. And so I gave a little more.
Right.
And it was just very special to me. So when they handed me that cassette and said, here, don't tell anybody you got this,
right,
I guarded it with my life. I played it for a few people, but that was my treasure.
If I'm on the highway, I'll put in Road All Night, and next thing you know, I'll be doing 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
There's just so much energy to that
and
song.
That was, you guys, all are phenomenal. Without drugs.
Right.
What did you guys have for lunch?
I don't know. I didn't eat with Paul. He went off someplace. They weren't vegetarian yet. You know, we went down to Chinatown. We had some great meals in Chinatown at 68, this fantastic old place down in Chinatown.
Right.
We went to Lu Chow's and we had, you know, steaks and all kinds of German food and all kinds of
stories.
Right. The surprisingly enough, I mean, we're in the 72 now, and the first three Wings singles are now going to be celebrating. Well, one of them has already. Mary Had a Little Lamb is going to be celebrating its 50th anniversary here next month. And then later on, Hi, Hi, Hi. I mean, just times pass by so quickly. I mean, any thoughts on the first three Wings singles?
Oh, man, sure. Hi, Hi, Hi. I'll give you a good one there. Okay. I believe I was working with Billy Joel producing his record when he called me up and said, I need you back in town. And I just left the project. Bang. Just was disappeared to record Hi, Hi, Hi. It had to be out. And Paul just got a, maybe Fern can help me with this. He bought a black guitar, a Gibson guitar, some kind of an acoustic guitar. I don't know shit about guitars. So, but it had stars on it, you know, on the fretboard. It had stars. And he was wanting to get hacked, and he pound with the palm of his hand on the wood and strike it, you know, strum it and bang it, and he cracked the damn thing. It was brand new, and we were in Spain on a little holiday, getting this song together when he did that. And I think if you listen carefully, you can hear. On the record, actually. So I reminded him about that one day. He said, shh, you don't tell anybody about that. But we were just crazy. We were into it, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit of I'm actually a guitar geek, and I'm going to bring up one that's really interesting. So that guitar is the Gibson Everly Brothers J185 that he, in the James Paul McCartney special, when he's playing through all the Beatles tunes and Heart of the Country during the fake photo with Linda.
Right.
Okay. Right.
Okay.
I remember watching that when PBS decided to play it. Like, you know, I was like 14 or 13. And I remember like just drooling over that guitar because it looked so cool, man.
Yeah, it was great.
Right.
I'm going to bring up an interesting guitar. So there's a photo of Denny, full-on Wings Denny, playing in a guitar, and it's got knobs on it, and I'm like, what the hell is that guitar? And it's a Guild. That exact guitar makes an appearance during McCartney's Chaos and Creation at Abbey Road.
Oh,
out
right.
Play
was right it a lefty?
No, it's a righty.
Oh wow!
It turns out that that's Paul's righty. Whenever he wants to play a right-handed guitar and practice playing on a right-handed guitar, he goes to a jam session and there's no lefty guitar, he knows what to do. Because he talks about it in that video where he's like 20 Flight Rock.
Right,
he played
right.
guitar and he played 20 Flight Rock upside down. Because that's that you got to think about. Okay, so you're 18. You're seven. How old was John when he met Paul? Was he 16 or 17?
16.
Yeah, young. I was at that very spot in the church where they first met. I took a picture of the four. That was great.
I mean, imagine you're 16. You're playing with your first band, and some kid shows up with a greased up hairdo. Looking like Paul McCartney, who's a very handsome man, I must say. And he just grabs your guitar and plays the fuck out of it upside down and sings 20 Flight Rock, which has more lyrics than, as many lyrics as a 50s song could possibly have. It must have been impressive. Because if there's one thing that I found so cool about Paul and all the members of Wings was the fact that it was popular music with amazing musicianship. Because, you know, I'm not slagging the Rolling Stones, but they never really had the musicianship that Paul especially had, being able to play piano so
everything.
Well,
everything,
yeah. Right.
Bass right. so well, and then sing like a superhuman. And, you know, it makes sense that like Denny and Spinoza and Hugh McCracken, you know, being like the top dog, you know, New York guys, you know, he was, the same way impressed with them, because it's like, mm-hmm. I mean, you're a jazz guy and you could also rock out on the drums, you know, it's really impressive. Denny's pedigree being the fact that he has a jazz background, but he right. doesn't do drums. He doesn't hit the drums like a jazz guy. He really slams, and it's a really cool thing. Same thing goes with Spinoza and McCracken, being guys that were, you know, you listen to Spinoza's records, he's a jazz guy, but he's right. also a dude, and you know, McCracken, which I'd like to segue into the fact that Denny's Trio is playing out again too soon.
Well, that was going to be my next question. I mean, are you still doing stuff with the Denny Sywell
Trio? Oh, yeah, sure. We have a gig at...
Yes, there we go.
This is my there mouse pad.
The magic pad, very nice.
We're playing the June 19th at the Baked Potato, a famous old jazz club here in L.A., and... So we just played last night, as a matter of fact. That's why I was taking a nap when you so rudely interrupted me. It was at a hotel. I did it for a friend of mine. We played for 280 lawyers at the Criminal Courts of Los Angeles award dinner. It was freezing. It was 38 degrees. They had the damn theater, the room so cold. And we had a Schlepp equipment, an organ, John's guitar, and my drums through tables up to next to the podium where they were doing all these awards. It was like a nightmare. And we all looked at each other. I thought we were done with this shit, you know. I did it as a favor to my friend who was the president of that association. And it was great just to play with these guys.
You need a roadie, dude.
So my roadie's in France right now. He missed that gig. My other roadie left to go back home in New Mexico, and I got a new one. But he's in France visiting his parents, so which is great because he speaks French and my wife is French. You know, he'll be there for all the other gigs.
Any plans for a new album with the trio?
There is. But that's under wraps for now. Quarter Valley Records is our label. And if we do it, I would imagine that we're going to try doing something live.
Oh, cool.
Doing a live album. Because there's a couple of new places. There's a place in town called Write-Off Room. It's owned by this guy named Bill Lynch, who's a great guitar player himself. I used to do a lot of sessions and stuff with him. And Bill, he's really given a home for LA musicians to play. And he's got a new club opening up in the next couple of months, I would think. And it's going to seat 300 or something. It's a much bigger venue. And it's going to be perfect. The sound is going to be perfect. So maybe we'll...
Nice.
Book a couple of nights in there, find a new direction, and record a live album and turn it.
Excellent.
Into, you know,
actually, very cool.
I'm going to now announce the record's going to be called Sywell Comes Alive.
Very good. You know, before we let you guys go, Andy, you wanted to talk about Mr. White.
Hey, listen, before we do that, because let's go back to those three CDs. I'd like to tell a quick story about Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Please. Yeah.
Everybody wants to know about that. Why you guys?
A
rock and roll band. And when Henry and I looked at each other, when Paul said, "We're going to do this song called Mary," I went, "This is a rock and roll band? What are we going to do this shit live? Come on!" So like we were really, you know, busting his balls, and he started playing it, and you know, we said, "Yeah, okay, all right, sure, if we got to do it, we'll do it." You know, you're the boss, so. So we did it, and I always wondered why it was. Later on, I found out that that was the first song ever recorded on that spindle thing.
Right.
And it was Mary Had a Little Lamb. He had a little daughter named Mary, who was my girlfriend. She used to jump off of my lap during RAM and everything. She was in the studio. She was like all over me, man. There's great pictures of me and Mary when she was a tiny little three-year-old, you know, behind my drums with sticks and all that stuff. So then we went out to L Street to film it, and we're out in this setting out in a park, and they had a set around a tree, the drums and the keyboard, Linda's keyboard, Paul and Henry and Denny, they're sitting there. And then they brought these sheep in and they slowly, they would slowly move the sheep in amongst the five of us. Mm-hmm. And just when they got it ready to turn the cameras on, you know, after like a long time getting these sheep in there, I would just take one little hit on the bass drum and they, boom, they'd scatter, you know?
Wow.
So it took a lot longer than it was supposed to take, right. But we finally got the shot. You know.
And right. you all did about four music videos for that song. There's like four different versions of Mary Had a Little Lamb on video.
Right.
I think Paul was always trying to appease his grandkids whenever he had them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He was always looking for that. You know, they were great parents, I must say, Paul and Linda both. And, right. And the same another quick story was Give Ireland Back to the Irish. I mean, it just happened. Right. And Henry was Irish, you know. He couldn't go home for the longest time, man.
Right.
Because all of his brothers had broken noses from beer bottles.
Yeah, I read that.
Right.
You know, it was horrible. But he lived in a town where don't come home, we'll shoot you.
Right.
And they meant it, you know. So, but that record, I mean, Paul had to make a political statement, which wasn't his thing or
ours.
We were up at the house and he wrote the song. And, you know, Ian and Trevor, our roadies, just set up some gear in the living room. And we started rehearsing it down. And then ABC News came over and filmed us playing it. And we kind of had our parts together. And I'm glad we had that song because it was a kind of a rocker. And in our first shows with the university tours, we had to repeat that song.
Yeah, because
there
wasn't enough material, so you recycled it. Yeah.
Right.
Love that
because,
song.
I mean, I guess it was the hit song then at the time. So, well, you know, why not?
All you have to do to make something a hit is ban it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry. But going back to the Mary Had a Little Lamb video, I love that part in the when you guys were playing soccer and you're the roughhousing.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that soccer wasn't a full contact sport. I almost put McCartney in a hospital one day. I mean, when I tackle you, you know, it's kind of American style. No, it was like boom. like a check,
right? Yeah, like a linebacker, right. Like a linebacker. Yeah. Right.
Boom. That's great.
I loved it. I dug.
Who invited?
Andy,
real quick, just a segue. I know that Fernando, you are a huge Yes fan. I am too. And recently, Alan White just passed away.
Oh, Jesus.
And I was just wanted to get your thoughts on Alan, Denny, and Fernando, your experiences, if you've worked with him, played with him. I mean, my personal favorite Alan White record with Yes is Relayer, hands down. But just a few minutes about Alan White, please. I mean, just a side segue, because it's just, I think it's he's too talented of a guy, and, you know, he deserves a few minutes.
Let me start with this, Fernando, because I want to tell you when I first met Alan. I'm working with Wings. We're in London, 1972. We're recording at Morgan Studios. I don't know what the hell we were doing there. It was one of the few times we recorded there, because we were usually at either
probably Abbey Red Road, Rose Speedway,
Trident, Abbey Road, Trident, or the place Olympic. So we were at Morgan. And we're outside smoking on a break. And this white S-type Bentley, a fastback Bentley, you know, pulls up. It's all white. The guy in it is dressed all in white. He's got long white hair, white fur rugs, white leather interior. He opens the door and he pops out and it's Alan White. I said, now this is what a rock star is supposed to do. And he was just going to work, going to work. And Alan and I, we did many sessions together with rock and roll fantasy camps what we played together. There's a bunch of that stuff you could probably even see on YouTube. I loved Alan. He was really a great guy. And we used to do this thing that it's called the NAMM Jam at the NAMM show. And it was no rehearsal. You get a bunch of guys and we just do like a talk through before we went out and played. And that's, I spent a lot of time with Alan during that. And his wife, Gigi, she's just the sweetest. Then I saw him a couple of weeks ago, a month ago, or whatever, when they had a video of him after that break-in.
Oh, looking for his drums, yeah.
They stole the Lennon Set from the Walls and Bridges album, and a lot of his gold records were stolen. And he was talking about it, and I couldn't believe how far down he had come. It was just it was just awful. It was, the writing was on the wall, and that was a very rude awakening. So God bless him, man. I miss him. And he's also, you know, managed by Martin Darvill, who I'm sure that his heart is aching as well.
It's really a situation to be a Yes fan right now.
So,
this is a third guy to go after Chris Squire and Peter Banks, and you know, it's very difficult when you have classic guys go like this. And you know, Alan, his career was incredible because he already peaked with his first gig, which is the Plastic Ono Band.
Ono Band, right?
Playing on Instant Karma. Talk about, from a drumming perspective, a masterful performance. And you know, for so manic on Instant Karma, and to be so just like simple and relaxed on Imagine,
right?
Same guy, you know, with the same boss. It's, you know, again, that's one of the things that I admire the most of musicians is versatility. You know, with,
and boy, did he have it.
He definitely had it, because, you know,
I mean,
Bill Bruford's shoes were very heavy shoes to fill, and yes, especially when he came in after their most complicated album at the point.
Close, you know, to the edge. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, which is not easy. And from what I understand, actually, there's two amazing facts that, you know, that they never played together when they did the Plastic Ono Band live piece in Toronto record. And they were on the plane and he had drumsticks on the back of the chair and they were running the songs. And, you know, they never played together until Downbeat.
Right.
You know, same thing goes with Yes. You know, famously, Alan White gets the call 2 weeks before the tour.
Yep.
And he's got,
you know, playing Close to the Edge, which is 18 minutes long.
Oh, God. You know?
So it takes a very almost superhuman musician to be able to pull something like that off. And from all accounts, you know, Alan was always a very just like powerful, amazing dude. And I saw him in his prime. I saw him when he was still really in there, man. And when they did the first reunion tour.
Oh, in 91 with the eight guys, with the eight man lineup?
No, eight guys. I saw the 95, the first, 96.
When they did the shows at San Luis Obispo?
Yes, right after that, with Wake,
Rao,
Choir, and Igor Khoroshev, at first, and then Rick Wakeman. So I saw them with that lineup, and you know, Alan was always a very powerful guy. And talk about different, you know, styles. It's like Bruford was very wrists. You know, Alan was
rocking, and I always say, so many people, Beatle people, know Alan White because of his Beatle association with Lennon. And as you said, he peaked. It was his high watermark. But the amount of work he did with Yes, I think if most Beatle fans listen to what he did with Yes, I think their heads would spin off if they listened to stuff like Relay or Tales, you know?
It's amazing that the same guy on Owner of a Lonely Heart is the same guy on Imagine, you know?
Yeah,
right.
Same guy on Instant Karma is the same guy on Sound Chaser.
Say, you know, Sound Chaser, right.
So the same guy on Sound Chaser is on, you know, Lift Me Up or Rhythm of Love, you know.
Right.
So he really rolled with the styles, and he wore a lot of hats. It was amazing. And my biggest memory of Alan White is that he was, him and Jeff Downs they called them the odd couple in the band because they would always be together. And, you know, on the, for example, on Cruise to the Edge, they would always be parked at the bar in the casino. they took selfies with everybody, signed every album.
Oh, they were great. I mean,
they never forgot a name. They never forgot a face.
No, I had a chance to meet Alan a couple times. I've seen Yes 30 times, you know, and I'm Fernando. I'm about the same age as you. I'm 41. So I've seen Yes plenty of times, and he's always very friendly. He signed stuff. He remembered me from gig to gig, and just a great loss, really is.
Yeah, great loss. The last few years was in some incredible pain from a botched back surgery. And then Jay Schellen had been playing the shows, and then they would bring Alan up for the encore.
Yeah.
So it was tough to watch at times. You know, but he always, man, he was with it. I mean, you know, the last time I saw him on the, it was the Yestival tour, and he was still playing, you know, great. I mean, his tempos were a little slower, but he was still playing. And, you know, but you could tell he was in pain. You know, when you see somebody grimacing a little bit on the kit, you know, it's always tough. But he was an incredible guy. He always was very nice to me, and you know, he was a fixture at NAMM, always at the Ludwig booth, you know, just like signing every autograph, you
everything.
Know? Yeah, really nice guy, and yeah. And again, you know, it's interesting that the variety of his discography, being that, you know, playing on Lennon, playing on All Things Must Pass,
sure,
that's him,
right? Most All Things Must Pass as well. Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, big loss, especially for the drummer world. I mean, he was a big influence to a lot of people in the drumming world, absolutely. So one last thing real quick. Did you ever collect Rams from around the world, Denny? Or would you just, because this is the Taiwanese.
I was going to say, where's that one from?
The Taiwanese copy of Ram, which is a little different from your basic covers, you know. So
I wanted to.
Pretty cool. But go ahead.
Did the Indian version, did they replace the cattle?
I'll have to look that up. But
totally.
But the right, yeah. Be funny.
Good one.
But
good one.
But the show is Saturday, July 16th. It's at the Troubadour. The vinyl copy of Ram On will be released in July as well. Wow. Double album, Cherry Red Records. We'll leave the link down below so you guys can click onto that and hopefully order that as well. And unless Denny doesn't approve the sound quality, that's, you know,
yeah.
Right? Right, absolutely.
Yeah, we'll also put the link for the Troubadour show as well under this link as well when we post this as well.
And where can people find the Some People Never Know cover, Fernando?
On all the streaming services. Just look up Denny Sidewell, Fernando Perdomo. Some people never know. You can find it's got a great.
Right. Cool. Well, I wish you guys
actually, the. Let me correct one thing, because the album is, it's beyond our examining. It's in production. I mean, so they're making up as we speak. So I think somebody at Cherry Red is actually okay to test pressings.
Oh, probably. Yeah.
We probably won't even get a chance to do that. I did that with my record, but it'll be good. I know that they're not going to let something like that pass.
No, they're a great label. That Mark Powell, he's got everything in order over there.
If it sounds as good as the McGeer album did when they released it a few years back, then it'll.
Did they release Mike McGeer's album? I didn't know that.
They sure did.
They did.
The one that I'm on.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, got a box set. It got a little bit of a box. Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. They did it.
It's fantastic. Guy. Yeah. You're on Leave It. Yeah, you're on Leave It on here. Yeah.
Boston album.
Yeah. That's right. The Lost Wings album, they call it.
74.
But I know this is going to be I know it's going to be a big success, this Ram On concert at the Troubadour. And I wish you guys the best of luck of this. Hopefully, maybe you can take it out to a couple more places if that's possible.
We want to We wanted to sell out so we can be streamed. Out so we can watch it.
Watch it, yeah. Right.
Comments I've seen so far are like, bring this to New York, bring this to Cleveland. Well, you know what? We got here. If this goes great, then we'll start discussing it. For now,
okay.
Pay-per-view.
Pay-per-view.
Good one.
Let's get the best stage, the best technology. Right. Do it one time, make it perfect, and set it on pay-per-view.
Yes. There we go. I love it.
Travel.
Yes. So, Denny, Fernando, thank you again for coming on and talking about this wonderful album, this wonderful show. And again, best of success to you guys on this one.
Thank you, guys.
Hopefully, thank you very much for popping on. And, you know, hopefully we'll see you guys again in the future.
Thank you.
All right. So everybody out there, thanks again. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Two Legs Podcast. And email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. The YouTube channel, Two Legs Paul McCartney Podcast. We're all out there. We're everywhere. Everybody, thank you. And as always, have a great day and a beautiful night. You guys are awesome. Take care.
Bye-bye.